this has to be one of the best romances I've read in fantasy, and I do wonder if it will be fulfilled or forgotten. Prose is not enough to elevate a book for me at all.
That's, I think, our fundamental problem is, like, we disagree hard, like, very hard with the message.
The text made a very good attempt to live up to its reputation. That's the most backhanded five-star review. Welcome back to another To the Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
Name of the Wind, five-star reviews. Rich and I are reacting. This is the second time we've done a long pod episode like this. The first one we did was reacting to the Sword of Kaigan one-star reviews, and we reacted to Sword of Kaigan one-star reviews because we think Sword of Kaigan is a five-star book. So we're going, wow, look how stupid this person who gave it a one-star review is. Wow, yeah. It was such a fun episode. I love it. We'll have that linked or in a little thing here that pops up on the YouTube screen. But for Name of the Wind, notoriously, we hate this book.
Yeah, bad book. Sub-two-star book.
1.5 stars, I'll say it. Bad.
Do you put it on same level as Wind and Truth?
Yes, they're the same.
The exact same.
Yes. They're both bad for equally bad reasons.
True.
Look at me being edgy. Wow. I don't But so the Name of the Wind, we both of us don't like this book, so we have several five-star reviews that we'll react to and show, hey, why do people love this book? And what do we disagree about here? Mm-hmm. What do we hate? And obviously, this is going to be all spoilers on Name of the Wind. We're going to let the hate fill us up. We're going to go full Anakin Skywalker on this.
Good.
It's going to be brutal.
We hope that one of you watching is one of the people that wrote this review, and we can roast that review of it. Make you feel real silly.
Well, let me tell you the selection.
Yeah,
I have.
You should feel real bad about liking a book. Ooh.
You silly goose.
Silly billies.
Well, yeah. Let me tell you who I have prepared here.
All right.
This is a surprise for you, Rich.
Okay.
I have three different reviews. One, the last one, is from a random person, like we did with the other one.
Okay.
And hopefully we get to the three. If we don't, maybe we just focus on one review.
Fair enough.
But the first two reviews we're going over, the first one is from an author, Mark Lawrence.
Oh, wonderful. I love Mark Lawrence.
What books has he written for the audience that doesn't know?
Mark Lawrence is the author of it's the Library Trilogy, I believe. I'm trying to remember the name.
The book that
wouldn't burn.
Yep.
Thank you. There's also the Book of the Ancestors, starting with Red Sister. And then there's also Prince of Thorns, that whole series.
Yep.
Couldn't get into Prince of Thorns. Love Book of the Ancestor. Book of the Ancestors, awesome series. Kick ass, and liked Book That Wouldn't Burn. Fine. I hope it gets better. I'll eventually get to the second book.
Awesome.
But yeah. No, the guy is awesome, though.
Great author.
Of the best world builders. He's a smart guy.
And we're going to be reacting, telling him why his five-star review sucks.
Good.
Okay? Not
everyone gets to be perfect.
The second person we're reacting to after Mark Lawrence is a very famous booktuber in space, Patrick Leo. And
you're going to hurt me.
He writes very well thought out and crafted defenses of his five stars, his one stars, whatever he writes, it's very well written. And
you can't
pick it apart. So we're going to try.
Okay, good.
It's going to be a fun challenge against an author, a booktuber, and a random.
Okay.
Want to give it a shot?
Yeah. I'm ready to go.
Because we are not exaggerating. We both, to express, we very much dislike this book.
Oh, yeah. No, I hate this one with a passion. The fact that I reread it, thinking to myself, I read it fairly early on, going like, maybe I just didn't connect with it. Maybe something's wrong with me when reading it. So many people like it. So I reread it just so I could maybe rethink everything. And no, I hate it just as much, if not a little bit more.
You doubled down.
Yeah, except for one category. I liked it slightly more.
The world a little bit more.
Yeah.
And also, bless you.
Thank you.
Also, it is very well written.
It's so well written.
We can't deny that.
That is true.
Can't deny. But I even think that's a little overhyped. That's my hot take. But, you know, okay, here we go. Here we go.
Dialogue in the sense of, like, dialogues. Yeah. If you're comparing aspects of the writing, the dialogue is pretty good, but yeah, it's not amazing.
The music scenes and the
music scenes, some descriptions.
Yeah. So here's the first review from Mark Lawrence. a successful author. Here, we'll break this down, okay? And Rich, anytime that I'm reading this review, just say stop there and jump in when you want to comment, or I'll just stop and comment. So we'll go back and forth. Okay. Mark Lawrence says this: I'll give this 5 stars with no begrudging. I'm pretty easy with my 5 stars. They're not reserved for the best books I've ever read, just very good books. I thought The Name of the Wind was very good. I read it and pause. He's already prefacing.
He's already hedging his bets.
I think Mark Lawrence hates this book.
No, here's the thing. I'm not calling Mark Lawrence a liar.
No.
I would never.
Never.
He just sees the flaws the same way as we do, but he doesn't begrudge the flaws as much as we do.
He's also an author. He has to be more respectful to his fellow authors.
Yeah.
He can't be going. I think he's also more lenient with his 5 stars because if he was just tossing out 3 stars and 1.5 stars like we did, other authors would see, look, that's the mean author guy who writes books and likes his books, but then rates everybody else's poorly. Mm-hmm. It's more of a social, it's probably a beneficial thing to do as an author is not shit on everybody.
It's generally hard.
I understand that.
Yeah, I get it.
But that's a lot of, hey,
that's hear a caveat. Me out.
Yeah. He's saying this is a very good book. He's not saying it's perfect. He's saying very good are his words. For us, very good. On our rating scale, very good means 3.75 stars. So that's where the difference. He's being so lenient with his 5 stars, we would give, under his terms, a very good a 3.75.
Yeah.
So just to show you where our scales are at here, okay?
We would like to say, if we were to translate, put it through the filter, we are arguing it's not a 5-star, but a 3.75.
On our scale.
But
he has a different scale.
The
wrong scale.
The wrong one.
So, Mark Lawrence says, I thought The Name of the Wind was very good. I read it in what, for me, was a very short time span of time. It had that Moore-ish quality that bestsellers need. Can I see what makes this the single best-selling epic fantasy series for a generation, apart from George R. R. Martin series? No. He's given up.
Despite giving the 5-star, he's giving a lot of reasons. All the things I said about him being like a very good author, very smart. He's given a lot of this. He's earned that cred.
He's making the argument for us.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, he's saying, hey, can I see why this is a bestseller? No, not exactly. Is it my favorite book? No, not really. I bet you later he's just going to go, well, the prose is really good, though. Okay, here we go. So, no. Continuing with Mark Lawrence's review. Except that perhaps the lesson is that to be head and shoulders above your competition in sales, all you need to be... Sorry, this is worded. Okay, he's the author, so I'm probably saying this wrong. Let me get this right.
Yes, you are.
Except that perhaps the lesson is that to be head and shoulders above your competition in sales, all you need is to be better by a nose. After that, the nonlinear dynamics of the market take over and elevate you to godhood. Okay, that's what he's saying. Got it.
You know what? That exact phrase kind of makes a lot of sense of this book does do something excellent. And I can sing its praises on often its descriptions and its poetic prose is better than almost everything I've read. I love it. That some scenes are so impactful to me.
He'll say, by a nose, in that category. People say the loot scene, and then they'll want to pitch it to a friend.
Exactly. But everything else, like he's saying, is like, none of the other things are leagues better than everything else. But this, an aspect, just by a nose, is significantly better.
Yeah. So he says this.
This entire thing is like a bunch of caveats so far.
I'm curious to see what really gets him, and it's probably pro stuff, but we'll see. He says, I love the writing, and that's very important to me. Rothfuss often treads the thin line between prose and poetry, and fortunately, it's excellent poetry that he brushes up against. The quality of the writing breathes magic into even fairly ordinary scenes and makes some of the important ones extraordinary. The story itself is mostly compelling. Another caveat.
Also, the word compelling. Like, not... It's mostly... enthralling, intriguing. It's compelling. It's mostly compelling. That's a mild word, but okay.
And I think it's fair to say for this and all the reviews going forward that say the writing's good, we agree.
Yeah.
And we won't say much on that. I just want to see what they say about the story.
That's the story, the themes, the characters.
Yes.
Where are they feeling?
Okay. So he continues by saying, the story itself is mostly compelling. It uses the reverse of the device I saw recently in Bloodsong of a framing story that's not in the first person, delivering up a first person narrative. Our hero, Quoth, has bags of attitude and is a total genius at everything. To balance out his all power, we have his poverty, bad luck, tendency to dig himself into a hole, and his powerful enemies. Okay. I think there's a lot I disagree with already there.
Yeah, overall.
Now, at the one hand, if you mean his powerful enemy by that school bully, Pipsqueak.
Maybe he means
the Chandrian.
Yeah.
And who barely show up in the book and are just, you know, they kill his parents and then they're gone.
And then they massacre some wedding at the end.
Maybe he means.
Oh, wait. Is that spoilers?
For
I feel like
for
we're spoiling the Name of the Wind.
Well, we have to.
Yeah, we do.
It's no, this is all spoilers. Yeah. No,
I know we didn't. No, I don't think we said that at the beginning.
Did we?
Full spoilers?
Guys, this is all spoilers, by the way.
Yeah, no, full spoilers, by the way.
We can't talk about it without spoiling the book.
That's true.
No, this is all spoilers for Name of the Wind.
I just don't think we said that. Now I'm off the hook.
If we didn't say it, going even further, yes.
Yes.
Because this is definitely more spoilers of talking about how, does he mean the powerful enemies by that very fearsome dragon at the end of the book where we are all shivering going, oh no, this dragon.
Oh, the doped up big lizard.
But hey, now that you know spoilers are unleashed, what do you want to say there?
Well, oh, no, continue on with it. I want to hear the rest of his phrase.
Continue past there? Okay. Quoth's real powerful enemy sits in the background as a motivator and presumably story for books 2 and 3, while his schoolboy adversary at the university fills in for the bad guy for most of the book. As I was just hinting at there, so he's talking about the Chandrian, who we were just saying, yeah, kills parents and gone, and then the school bully, who bullies him in school.
He fits the role, I guess.
Nice. He's doing the bullying. Any thoughts?
Yeah. It's boring. It's a real boring. For the story set up,
yeah,
it's real boring of like giving us all this potentially cool stuff.
The King Killer Chronicles.
And then immediately like, nah, schoolyard bully. It's like, come on. Like if that's the name of the book, fine. Let's start there and ramp it up. But you can't start big, go extra small and then stay there the entire time. Like, you know what I mean? Like if the ending of the book like ramped it up a bit, like okay, cool, all right, but no, it just kept going down.
Yeah,
like, oh, are we gonna ramp up with the dragon? No. Let's dial it down again. No, you're too hyped. Down.
The stakes were permanently milquetoast. Just let's stay. It was a heart rate monitor without the pulse. Just let's stay right there. I want to see more of the points he makes here. Then maybe there's more to react to. So he says, like Bloodsong and many other really successful books.
I like that book, by the way. Good book. Book good.
Is it good?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. I'll trust you. The Name of the Wind is at its core a school story. Harry Potter, Wizard of Earthsea, etc. all feature magic schools. For Bloodsong and Ender's Game, it was a battle school. But the point is that the schools plus lessons plus masters combo sells bucket loads if you write it really well and plumb into a compelling larger picture. With magic, the school system also provides a painless way of educating your readers in the magic system you have, by virtue of being delivered through formal education, elected to use. Was there anything wrong with it? For me, the whole, and then I broke another string, and I was very hungry and dirty and Tarbian sections were rather slow and lengthy. I understand the role in the story, but they felt overplayed. And at the end, the whole business with the Dracus felt tangentially and diluted the end game for me, but no, nothing of great significance. I agree.
This is an interesting 5-star review. All right.
I agree.
Can't
with that.
Say any better, Marcells.
I promise he gave it 5 stars.
All right, sure.
Okay, so, okay.
When's he getting around to the compliments?
Are we just sticklers with our ratings and going like 5 stars? Hey, the book floored us. It's not perfect.
Yeah.
And our rating 5 stars, it's not a perfect book. It's just, wow, that floored us. That book does something so well. I mean, not just that, multiple things, or I'm going to think about the book. And
Yeah.
I think the best
way of saying like floored is in one way or the other, I could use it as a good example of something mm-hmm. of like my, oh, here, one of my examples of, you know, amazing characters. Like that would be my example to point to. Yes. Not just they were good, not just they were like really well written, but like.
I'm trying to point the Lonesome Dove in the background. Yeah.
Honestly, a lot of on that shelf. Lonesome Dove,
Lions of Arasan, Piranesi,
Soren Akkaigan.
All of those.
Honestly, Dungeon Crawler Carl, if I'm totaling the series,
yeah.
I'm having a good time.
Oh, the character works great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get to it.
It's excellent.
All right.
Yeah. So
let's continue on with this.
The point being, he's
5-star review.
Patrick Leo maybe will come out swinging more.
I hope so.
Because then Mark says this, a final observation, this is the end of his review, final observation, throughout the book, we, like Quoth, are constantly aware of money. Quoth's poverty is a driver and source of tension. He is constantly coming into money, losing it, incurring costs. We know the contents of his purse at almost any time and the price of all his needs. To me, this was very reminiscent of Dostoevsky's work and to a lesser extent, Dickens, where a similar focus on the number of coins in our character's pocket is maintained and the need to cover their expenses drives much of the story. In short, though, given the impossible level of expectation built upon years of hearing how incredible this book is, the text made a very good attempt to live up to its reputation. That's the most backhanded 5-star review.
All right.
He says this. Mark, I respect it. He says, or do I respect that? I don't know. Because he says, given the impossible level of expectation built up by years of hearing how incredible this book is, the text made a very good attempt to... See, you know,
what the hell is Mark's four star?
I don't want to hold back because my honest thoughts about this are I think Mark is being nice and clearly doesn't love the book that much just from what he's saying. Yeah. I don't think that's now in his scale, it is a genuine 5-star maybe because that's how he writes things. He just gives a bunch of 5-stars out. He's an author. He understands how hard it is to write a book.
My guess is the 5-star is like it passes the minimum of quality of like book good. Like, is that kind of what I'm trying to he's think saying about? Like,
well, he says very good. That's his
very
he
good.
He called book. It very good.
And so anything past there, everything past very good is 5-stars. If he's going to give anything lower than that, it's probably not a good book at all. Like, not passable.
Yeah.
So if he gives it a 4, it's probably just not a passable book.
It's probably like, oh, it's all right.
Maybe or he just doesn't do 4-stars.
Maybe.
It's either no stars or 5-stars, and that's just all he does.
It just seems from this, I think Patrick Leos will have more to react to, but it made some of the defense for us. That review.
The last thing, which I thought was interesting in our book club discussion,
yes.
was the focus on the money. And that was a highlight for a lot of people. Yep. It is an interesting factor that we know how much money Quoth does have at every moment. And I understand that's the focus. I don't particularly find that as, particularly compelling. What about you thinking?
Yeah, it was a factor in the book. It was you knew how much money he had. I don't think it was anything standout. I think it's also why it's not compelling is it's not a hard thing to do. Any book could keep track of money.
Yeah, it's supposed to put the tension and pressure on. Yeah.
Impacts of BC was impoverished. I get that, and that you keep track, but that's an easy thing to do. You have this much money. You spent this much. Okay. Yeah. All righty.
Am I
being too harsh?
I guess it does. To give you a tone and feeling from the characters, people who, you know, are very poor. Or used to be like just that mindset of always knowing how much money you have and knowing constantly how much you actually need and them never being the same. That is a feeling that people can identify with and people can actually how they connect with Quoth of like seeing his mentality toward money compared to everyone else was compelling for people. I guess that's the.
The character
that's a steel man, I can say, like, why people connected with the character. To me, like, I understood that, but it doesn't really compel me. Like, I understand it.
Well, it would compel me more if I thought Quoth wasn't going to be all right. Like, him being so talented, being able to make money with loot, and being such a, like, Gary Stu or Gary Stu-esque adjacent as mm-hmm. much as you can get there. Just made me go, even though he's impoverished, I think he's going to be all right. He had so much talent and he had so much going for him.
The big change, the moment where that impoverished state that Quoth is in feels far more of a plot, just a plot device rather than actually a pressure on the character, is when Quoth had literally nothing and he was on the streets in the slums.
In Tarbian. Yep.
It took him less than 24 hours to go to the school and come up with the money. Like, he, because how smart he is and how talented he is with mm-hmm. acting, lute playing, everything else, he was able to just, and I'm going to school. Like, a very expensive school. He figured it all out. He got out of his predicament he was in for years because of his trauma. Understandable. But then when he just turns it all around, I'm going,
yeah.
Any money problem he has, like, he'll figure it out. I'm not that worried for him. I'm not feeling that pressure of when he really can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't hit as hard.
Yeah. And so otherwise, that when that is brought up, you make a good point to, hey, some people did feel compelled by that because keeping track of money, you can relate and empathize. But for those reasons is why it didn't compel me.
Yeah, specifically Quoth in that predicament doesn't compel me the same way maybe a different character would.
As he said, from Dostoevsky's work or Dickens' work.
Yeah.
Compared to put Dostoevsky and Rothfuss in the same sentence hurts. And I haven't read Dostoevsky. It's just such a more profound name, you know?
Yeah.
So that review by Mark Lawrence, he gave it a 3.75, okay? In our rating system, I think we got to get to a
We're translating.
We got to get to a real five-star Patrick Leo.
I'm betting he gave it a real five-star review.
Patrick, you could check out his review as well on Patrick Leo. Shout out. And also, you mentioned our book club. We talked about Name of the Wind. Check our book club in the link in the description below. This month, I think it'll be just over by the time people see this, The Lathe of Heaven. Mm-hmm. And then we'll figure out what the next book we're doing with people. But I'm reading Game of Thrones right now. We'll be doing a book club with people. Whatever we read, we usually do book clubs with peeps. So,
cool.
You ready for Patrick Leo's?
Yep.
Here we go. As an avid adult fantasy reader, out of all the books that I've been recommended, The Name of the Wind has always been recommended to me the most. Google, Goodreads, book reviewing sites, 9gag, even some people who don't read a lot of fantasy books, they have all praised the series highly, and now that I've read it, it is in my opinion that the fame is totally well-deserved. There's no doubt that this is a truly fantastic high fantasy book. Pause there. At least Patrick is standing by. This is
it's well-deserved, a five-star
and fantastic.
Yeah. That's close to our floor definition. Yeah. Yes.
He's not saying, well, you know, does it deserve the thing? Maybe not. But with all these ifs, ands, and buts. But
yeah,
so Patrick continues by saying this. In terms of plot overview, the book is simplistic enough. Quoth Kingkiller, quoth the Bloodless, quoth the Arcane, the man of many names tells the story of his life to the chronicler, who will write Quoth's entire chronicle starting from his childhood up to his present life as an innkeeper in Waystone Inn. Quoth will tell the entire chronicle of his life within 3 days, and The Name of the Wind encompassed day one of his storytelling. That's it. That's really the basic premise of the story. You can even call this novel a high fantasy memoir if you want. Okay, so far he's describing the book. Mm-hmm. Nothing to disagree with. That is the book.
That is what it is.
That is. Yes. Any interjection?
No. Snide comments will be saved for later. Let's continue.
I appreciate that. And then he has a quote from the book he uses. It says, "It's like everyone tells a story about themselves inside their own head. Always. All the time. That story makes you what you are. We build ourselves out of that story."
That is the best possible theme from the book that we think Patrick actually kind of fumbled. Beside the point.
Patrick Rufus, not Patrick Leo. Yeah.
Yes.
Just to clarify. Rufus. Yes. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
Patrick, you can interchange the two. But yes, that is
Patrick, not Patrick.
Yeah, no.
His name.
Yes, Patrick.
Patrick Leo.
Patrick Rufus.
Patrick
Leo.
Patrick.
That's why he likes to book their names.
Yes.
See, he was. But yes, that is that. What do you think about that theme about storytelling in The Name of the Wind?
Oh, sure. It's probably one of the bigger ones. I don't think it's handled very well in this book overall. I think you made a really great point that line comes at the tail end, like all the stuff with Bast really should not have been saved for the very end of the book. It should have been a midpoint book and really puts the whole story in context of forcing Quoth to see, like, tell his own story a slightly different way to get his current self out of the funk. And, like, how much is he twisting his own narrative to his own, like, wrong-headed viewpoint of his own life? I don't think that's particularly handled as well, just the nature of his storytelling, but
yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah, that was when finishing the book, that end scene was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So you do agree that having that in the middle of the book would just make it more interesting, more compelling, that theme would resonate more or actually affect Quill's character, and we would look at the narrative differently.
There's a couple of good moments that could have been done well. There's a couple moments where Quoth interrupts himself in his storytelling to get something right or to clarify or to backtrack to, like, going, I didn't present that well, like get rid of that page and let me correct it. That could have been handled a lot better if the scenes were twisting. We get one viewing of the story, and then immediately after a correction that shows a different twist on it.
Yeah.
Then maybe, like, goes, maybe Quoth's being a little too hard on himself, that he's really looking at this in a negative point of view where he shouldn't be. Something like that could have added to that theme of seeing two scenes told in different ways. I think could have been really helpful for that message, but we don't really get that. I think that would have helped.
Yeah, I agreed with you. And that so that's a quote from the book. This is now, this is no longer a quote. This is Petrick saying this again. So if you haven't read this book yet, you're probably wondering why this book became one of the most highly acclaimed fantasy books of our time. Honestly, I have to agree that it's seriously one of the best out there. It's simply amazing, and there are a lot of factors in the book that worked so well harmoniously toward producing that result. However, there's one single element in the book that excels above all the others. Is it the characters? Could be. The Name of the Wind is thoroughly a character-driven book, and if the characters weren't well-written, the book would pretty much be screwed. The whole book is told solely from Quoth's perspective. It's written in third-person point of view for the present time frame, shifting to first-person point of view during the flashback sequences, which means you'll be seeing the first-person point of view more often than the other. Trust me, they are extremely well-written. Quoth is a memorable character, and his narrative is wonderfully compelling to read. The Name of the Wind is his coming-of-age tale, covering his life from the time he was 8 years old up to his 15th year. So, okay, the substance we can comment on there. He says Quoth is a compelling character. That's where I disagree.
Yeah.
You also disagree.
Yeah, completely.
And why is he not compelling?
If he is not the textbook definition of a Gary Stu, he's pretty damn close to it and makes it very not compelling. Let's get out of the way of, he's basically prodigal, genius, magic, memory, dance, all this stuff. He's a prodigal genius at basically anything he tries to do, except when it comes to women and luck, basically. And the compelling nature is the Quoth is great, but he has his flaws, is maybe his pride, and also the world around him just kind of wants to tear him down. He's unlucky. Am I off base here so far of what the intention is?
Oh, I disagree with what you said, but you also will agree with what I said on this. Of the pride is supposed to be a flaw.
Yes.
That's the thing. But the issue is that pride is not a flaw in the actual book.
Because it's stated. It's supposed to be like, oh, he's very prideful. There's a couple scenes where you're supposed to feel like, oh, Quoth is digging himself a hole. Where I'm looking at it going, no, he's being treated poorly and he's standing up for himself. That's not pride. That's not like, oh, he is being mistreated. And that's supposed to, like, him not wanting to be bullied or him not wanting to be, like, actually abused. Oh, he should have just taken his licks. No, he shouldn't have. Like, that's the wrong lesson to take from this. Quoth is so prideful because you know, the bully is trying to harass him, and he goes, no, fuck off. Like, that's all. Quoth doesn't even really particularly antagonize the schoolyard bully. He just kind of discounts him. He's like, when the schoolyard bully keeps trying to like egg him on and like bait him, Quoth just like throws a quip back at him and mocks off. Like, that's not like particularly prideful or he's rising the bait. It's just normal behavior. Mm-hmm. When the teacher is trying to single him out and abuse him, and, you know, Quoth is being a little smart and actually like playing by the rules to like show his talent, which he's supposed to do. He's trying to get ahead. And it's like, oh, look at that. He's being prideful. He didn't need to do it that way. He got permission from the teacher. He did everything right. He was supposed to. And like, oh, the worst thing he did, he gave the teacher a slightly hot foot. Oh, no. No. How's he supposed to know that that's actually so terrible he's going to get whipped for it?
And then what message are we supposed to take from the book other than that pride is a good thing for Quoth? Because the theme of the book ends with one of the most prideful, stupid messages I've read of him and his treatment of Denna. That's her name, right? Mm-hmm. And how you could see the pride from Quoth, but it is shown by Patrick Rothfuss. It is shown by current and past Quoth that Quoth is doing the right thing. It is written as though Quoth has this interaction with Denna and this love story with Denna. Denna ends up being a wildflower who doesn't end up with Quoth, but Quoth, looking at Denna, goes, you know what? The new boyfriend of Denna will not taste her lips like I did. Like, you know, they won't have the experience.
You may taste her lips, but you will not understand her heart. Yes. Like I did. Ugh.
You don't know the subtlety of our love, and you'll never really understand Denna. She's a wild thing, and we really have that true love. Me and Denna really have it. Even though you're sleeping with her, breathing on her, I and Denna have this connection. And so, Quoth, being prideful, trying to, in a way, if this was the message of the story, he's so prideful and prevents himself from, he convinces and talks himself into, hey, Denna's a wild thing and there's nothing I could do about it, but I'm in the right here, because he basically takes the agency away from himself and says
he also takes the agency away from her.
Yeah.
That she's just a wild thing and her actions are not her own. Like, she is fully capable of making her own decisions.
You are fully capable of asking her out.
She is not this wild flower thing that she, you know, don't blame. He has some quote where he talked with his friend, something like, you don't blame the deer for how, like, the deer, when the deer runs away or whatever it is, like, mm-hmm. comparing her to a wild animal. It's like, she's not a wild animal, man. She's a person that can make choices.
And she has that.
You may not like the choices, and that's fine. But taking that away from her and just going like, yeah, no, it's very objecty and possessive nature of it.
And the narrative has his friends, after that chapter happens, push back on Quoth and go, hey, shouldn't you da-da-da-da? And the argument is set up for Quoth to look like the victor against his friends and go, you guys don't understand.
And then present day Quoth kind of just doubles down
and showing.
And if we're supposed to, one, here's another factor, people going, oh, yes, present day Quoth is also not particularly good. Like, this is, Quoth is not actually that much older. He's only like, what, 20, late 20s or something?
At the oldest? In his old age, yeah, 20 something.
Yeah. So he's not supposed to be fully developed, which to me, I'm going, well, poor choice of like narrative framing. Like, why do this whole past present Quoth if
he's the same?
Present Quoth is basically the same. Like, has not learned a moral lesson. Like, that actually is a benefit of reading, like Mark Lawrence actually mentioned, of like Blood Song, does have this of present day character writing about something and going, when the character in the past, the story that we're getting, goes off and like makes a mistake or is wrong-headed, whatever it is, present day often has a moment of like, I was an idiot.
They can give you clarity and explain, hey, the past self here, that's stupid. Oh, that's smart. I wish I didn't do that.
Because if you're not going to have that kind of reflection of past and present, like going, oh, this is where I was dumb, this is where, to show the change, why have the present day? Why do this whole frame narrative thing if they're both the same.
Just tell the story.
Yeah. Then just stay in one tense. Like, I just don't see much of a purpose to it other than the, oh, wow, see where the character was and see where the character's at now.
Yeah.
See that dynamic change and like, oh, what is, how did they get there? I'm reading Name of the Wind going, eh, they're basically the same. And one's sad. One's a lot sadder now. But in all honesty, he's not happy. He's not that happy in the past either. So why have this story?
And Quoth is certainly written to where you're supposed to root for him. This is not a morally gray character, a villain character, an anti-hero. This is Quoth, root for him. Look, impoverished. You want him to do well. You want him to pass in school. You want him to avenge against the Chandrian. And so this, even his love story is, it's meant to feel bad for Quoth. It is written in such a way where you want to feel and you want to be compelled by and sad for Quoth and looking at the end of, wow, look at this story. Look how he views himself. But he has a genuinely unhealthy way and a prideful way of viewing relationships and himself that's not addressed. And not just not addressed, but
this is our point of, if that is the point of the book, then the message is handled well. But we personally believe that Patrick Rothfuss had that was actually the moral right of the message, that Quoth is not incorrect in his viewing. That's, I think, our fundamental problem is, like, we disagree very hard with the message.
Yes. And so where it comes back to is Quoth a compelling character, him being so Gary Stu, his flaws being elevated as, like, the moral message of the story, and just there's no meat to it. Where was the compelling part about Quoth? I guess he went through hard times. He was impoverished, then went to school and had obstacles to overcome, whether that be the school bully, whether that be the magic school teacher. And he had to solve things with his insanely intelligent mind of, here's how I'm going to do the magic system. Here's how I'm going to solve. Here's how I'm going to run in the fire because I'm heroic and will save this girl. And he's the hero.
I think a very uncompelling combo is having your main character, like, big obstacle to overcome or big flaw is being very unlucky, and then also them being, you know, kind of perfect. That, like, I can see a character, like, there are plenty of characters where their big flaw is being very unlucky and being in an unfortunate situation.
Yeah.
But you kind, like, that's almost definition of an underdog story. But often, like, you have to have them take their licks. They genuinely aren't the best at everything, and they learn and grow. And they're unlucky, and then do that unluckiness, they kind of improve themselves. Like, they take these challenges and grow from it. And, like, the message at the end is, like, all of the world beating down on them made them stronger. And, or, you want to take it the negative way, beat them down and broke them. One of the two. But if they're just really unlucky, and the main character is also just a super genius, good at everything that they try and do, it feels very much of, oh, plot does something to the character, and the character just doesn't need to learn a lesson, doesn't need to actually grow or change, just can get out of it because they're very intelligent. So it takes away all this anxiety and tension from a story.
And again, more character agency. It's not Quoth's fault.
Yeah.
He's unlucky.
Yeah.
So okay, that's just why the character's not compelling to us. But this next section, do you want me to go back to review?
Continue.
So Patrick Leo continues by saying, we will read about Quoth's struggle during this period of time and how his life was an ever-changing cycle, fortune, and disaster. Plus, in the addition of empathizing side characters, empathizing side characters.
What is
empathy, not emphasize.
Yeah.
So I was.
You said emphasize weird.
Empathizing.
Just keep going. You're fine.
I'm going to start that paragraph over. We will read about Quoth's struggle during this period of time and how his life was an ever-changing cycle, fortune, and disaster. Plus the addition of empathizing side characters such as Bast, Simone, Elodin, and Uri made the book even more intriguing. However, I have to say, no, it's not the incredibly written characters that dazzled the most to me. Is it the world building? Well, it's true that the world building of Temerant is tremendous and intricately crafted. The currency, mythology, legends, songs, and unique magic system called Sympathy felt so real and believable to me. They enhanced the immersive and vivid nature of the narrative. And yet, no, it's not the world building. Any thoughts on the world building?
I liked it more on the second read through. The magic system, I think, is well done. It's well done, magic. The rest of the world itself doesn't feel nearly as alive as that. But then again, it is the first book. We don't see too much, but I don't know.
Magic system's good.
I wasn't super immersed in the locations that we got, personally. But the magic system was good.
Yes, and the cool stories that they share.
Yeah.
And yeah, well done there. Was it then the action? No. Don't come into this book expecting a lot of battle or war scenes because you'll most likely be disappointed. The narration is extremely engaging and also intense in some places, but there are approximately only 20 pages of battle scenes in total. The Name of the Wind will not pull you into the usual grand tale of good versus evil, where the main story revolves around the protagonist's struggle against the villains to save the world. So no, it's not the action. It's music. The part that captivated me more than anything else in the book was its depiction of music. There's a huge emphasis on music right from the beginning of the story all the way to the end. No matter what the genre we read, we are all obsessed with music. Music is vastly integral to the overall quality of the book. It's insane how beautifully written the depiction of music and sounds are. I could see the way the fingers and strings dance to form the music. I could hear the audience in the tavern cheering when Quoth played the lute vigorously. I could hear the silence of the crowd when Quoth stopped playing. And most of all, I could feel the emotions oozing out of the audience through the music. Music that was created specifically through words and letters. One of my favorite scenes in The Name of the Wind is when The Lay of Sir Savian Trailyard, a legendary tragic ballad composed by the most famous Edma Ra, was performed. It's so masterfully written, and right now, in my head, I have my own perception of how this song should sound. I can't wait to see that perception compares to Lin-Manuel Miranda's rendition of this song in the upcoming TV series adaptation of this novel.
I imagine that's probably not going on right now.
Did that get canned? Who knows?
I mean,
I wonder.
It's been a while.
Yeah. But thoughts on the music portion?
I actually do completely agree. Yeah. No, it's great. Every time music is actually described, played, it really is the most compelling aspect of this whole novel. Character moments of anything, the most compelling part about Quoth is him being a musician. And the connection he has, like, there's a couple scenes early on where he's with Denna, he's going to the school, and the other person in the caravan has a lute, and you see both the respect that Quoth has for, like, he understands, like, that's a musician's instrument. You don't just touch someone else's instrument, especially without their permission. But he's gone so long without properly playing music that he just has this need to play, and the reverence he holds this other musician's lute for, and how he plays it is beautifully well done, and how he expresses his trauma through music was really well done. Of course, the same scene that Petricula is talking about, amazing. All of that stuff, just, it is wonderful. I loved it. But that's not enough.
Are you a financial advisor considering the independent RIA model and wondering where to start? Start with Schwab Advisor Services. They've helped thousands evaluate the full range of options and can help you determine your best path forward. Start your journey today at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths.
It was not enough to... If everything else was fine, I would probably feel maybe in a similar way about this book. Of that, on an okay characters, okay plot, okay world building, all these other factors that are just okay, that probably would have elevated me of, like, I love the book. But just because I love this one aspect, the rest is so bad for me that I just can't. I can't connect with it.
Yeah, that entire music scene being in the middle, that was in the middle of the book, you'd say, right? Just about that tavern scene, or was it more toward latter half? I remember it being pretty in the middle. Do you remember differently?
It's a little after the middle, but...
A little after.
There's a couple of the other scenes that stand out in the beginning. I think even, like, directly after his parents' death and him playing his lute, I thought was handled really well. I really liked those scenes. That is the biggest draw for the series, or this book at least.
The famous lute scene, though, where does that one happen?
I think it happens just after the middle.
But somewhere's there, yeah. And when this is a part about how he writes music is wonderfully done. This is where I think if this book and that chapter was a short story or a novella, you'd probably be singing its praises going, wow, everybody read this. Look at this little 50-page novella about music.
Yeah.
But you're more critical, as am I, of the longer a book is, the more you have to justify its page count. Mm-hmm. You say this all the time. That's really the case of just to read some music scenes, I'll just go listen to Spotify. Okay. I'm fine. Having that scene in there. Yeah. It's well done scene. So like we said too, we won't the prose and music stuff.
Wonderful. Gotta
think the same. Not enough. Throughout. Not enough. Yes.
Not enough to carry the rest of this travesty.
And so Patrick continues by saying, it's a tricky business to find the right formula to unify all these magnificent elements in a book, especially with music being one of them. Both, but Rothfuss managed to do it. How did he achieve the superb balance for all these factors? Superlative prose. Seriously, I can't stress this highly enough. Rothfuss's writing style is unquestionably phenomenal. There's a glimpse of grace in almost every word you'll read in the book. With Rothfuss's prose, The Name of the Wind would probably be, oh wow, would probably receive a 2 or 3 stars rating at most from me. Okay, so this is insightful. This is insightful. Patrick Leo is saying, if not for the prose, without the prose, this would be a 2 or 3 star book from Patrick Leo. So what we're getting at here is all these 5-star reviews might agree with us. Here's the thing. For me personally, if it's just amazing prose, but everything else sucks, like just prose is the factor, which is what Patrick Leo's getting at. He enjoyed stuff more than me, I'm sure. Prose is not enough to elevate a book for me at all. As far as any of our categories go, we have emotional impact, thought-provoking characters, plots, world-building, and prose. Prose, to me, is the frosting in the package. I love good prose, but I need good story before good prose. That's how I would look at something.
The three main elements from our rating system that I think is the meat, that one of these three has to... either one or all three of these things has to be there in a significant way, is characters, thought-provokingness, and plot. One of those has to carry the rest. If you miss on all three of those, what do you have for a story? I know plenty of good sci-fi that doesn't have really great characters, but hey, the plot knocks it out of the park. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Or it has great themes and okay, at least the book's getting me to think about something. Oh, that's really cool. But if you don't have any of those things and you just have prose or you just have world building, it can be good, but is it a good story? No.
Yeah, the first 4 ratings in our system are more the story. The world building and prose are the added flow. Mm-hmm. Even give me amazing world, right? That's not even enough of a story for me, because if I want an incredible world, you read a textbook. Which is totally fine. Just read something like that. But as far as a story goes, the characters, which we talked about with Quoth, the message about pride, the message about agency, and the plot itself being a typical trope of academia, but done in a low stakes fashion when first promising, hey, you're a king killer. Look at this incredible story of my past. I'm going to hook your reader with this tale of my days as a child and just look where I go from here. Then setting that up and then having school, magic school bus. There's not a bus, I'm just saying that. And then boring dragon at the end with a poor message about the love story. Like, it's such a boring package. I don't care how well it's written.
Yeah.
I just don't. Maybe I'll quote. Actually, I won't quote it. I'm not connected enough with the story to go, oh, look at that line. Even when I think of the music... mm-hmm. In Name of the Wind, I don't talk about it much. I don't recommend it because I would not hand somebody this book and go, wow, you just got to read this thing for this one scene that you may like.
Yeah, that's true. I'm in the same boat. So
But so
it seems like Petrick is close to the same boat as us, though, as well.
He would say it seems like Mark Lawrence was saying, hey, it's very good. Not talking about the actual story, but going, look how, you know, it does something above the nose.
Clearly, a lot of people like it. So
and he was saying they're both saying that does the prose very well. And in Patrick Leo's review, he's saying he would give it a 2 or 3 stars at most if without the prose. Also, it seems like what Patrick's saying, too, is the story sucks. I don't know how else to read into that. It just seems like we focus more on story than other people reviewing this book.
Sure.
So that's where our hate is coming from. Of the story sucks, the character sucks, the theme sucks, the also, emotional ride is boring.
I do think it's fair to say that we don't connect with Quoth in the same way that a lot of people do. So the people that like this book do connect with the character.
No, I'm not talking about people. Talking about these 5-star reviews.
Fair enough. Both
Mark Lawrence and Patrick also don't connect with it. So you're right. Other people might connect with Quoth, but I'm trying to see like what are they saying good about Quoth. So far, all that was said was Quoth is compelling. Why? How is he compelling?
Yeah.
And then we're saying all these years, why not? So how can Quoth be compelling? The prose is great. Or how could Quoth be compelling, but you give it a 2 or 3 stars without the prose? So it can't be that compelling if you're compelled by a character. I don't know. I hate this book. I'm sorry. It's not good. I will go. It's bad for society. If you read this book and gave it to your children, they would be worse off for reading this book. They would have a bad moral message about what to do and how to face challenges and how to treat women and how women should be perceived.
I am hearing unhealthy. You loud and clear.
It's unhealthy.
We got to get a petition started for a book banning. That's what I'm hearing from you. The Name of the Wind needs to be banned. In all libraries across the country.
We've probably sold a lot of books for the Name of the Wind. We've done reviews. And here's the thing.
Shame.
I don't mind. People, obviously, buy the book if you want to and then burn it. But okay, next part.
Yeah.
This is from Patrick Leo again, continuing. Patrick Ruffus is a master craftsman with words and his prose deserves. I got to be honest. I'm done hearing the prose is good. I'm getting frustrated. I want to hear story reasons why this is a good book. Okay, continuing. And his prose deserves only the highest praise from me. There's a myriad of quotable, or should I say quotable? That's pretty funny. Statements.
We always appreciate puns around here.
Statements and phrases throughout the story that made me feel like writing them all down in my notebook. And yes, I did. And here's a quote. Words are pale shadows of forgotten names. As names have power, words have power. Words can light fires in the minds of men. Words can wring tears from the hardest hearts. Well written.
Well written line.
Nice line. Now shut up. Okay. Now here's the next part. It's meticulous, brilliantly unputdownable, elegant, lyrical, and poetic. It's evident how the 14 years of revision and editing brought fruition to this absolutely marvelous result. And that is something to note. It did take 14 years to write this book. I mean, the new book's taking just as long or longer. And I think that is a part of Patrick Ruffus's craft when he was looking at the story and doing the revisions for it. This is something Sanderson said, so I don't want to say he was talking about Ruffus, but Sanderson said before you publish your first book, you should get good at writing books. Mm-hmm. And Sanderson famously wrote 13 before he got his first book, Elantris, published. And so he's like, you get in the habit so you know how to produce books so that when you do get that deal and you have deadlines, you're able to meet those deadlines. Whereas Ruffus, who his first book, his debut novel, The Name of the Wind, hit the presses running and hit the presses hot, didn't have the habit of producing more books because he spent 14 years on one.
Well,
so
also,
it affects the amount he's able to write.
To me, he's polishing a fundamentally flawed product that, he made it sound pretty. Prettied it up. He went line by line to make it as poetic and as beautiful as possible. But ultimately, the core of the story is a debut novelist. I get it. An inexperienced author. That's what the story itself feels like, a very inexperienced writer's story.
Mm-hmm.
And
think about that too. This is probably part of the reason too why I'm just projecting of why I think it's so bad. Mm-hmm. He must have taken so long editing these paragraphs, revising, making sure the words were perfect, that he wasn't able to kill his darlings and go, why would he get rid of a chapter or a paragraph when he spent weeks on that paragraph or weeks on that page there? And so when if he wanted to make a plot change and went, that's kind of boring, that doesn't make sense. And he's written this for 14 years. And if he was to go back and take out a plot section or change something, that's taking away years of work. So why change the plot if he just look at that perfectly written chapter he just wrote? Why would he get rid of that chapter? Well, because it's the pacing sucks. Quote doesn't make sense here. Even if he thinks it's kind of off, wouldn't he be reluctant to change it because he spent so long doing the wrong thing? I don't know. I'm projecting, of course. This is just I'm trying to rationalize.
I can't how this wait ended to roast your debut novel. I can't wait for it.
All's I ask, Above Name of the Wind, and I'm happy. That's
all right.
It. Not the pros. The pros won't be.
No. But I hope. I have faith that you will write a better story than Name of the Wind.
Reacting to one-star reviews of my book, and it's you. Your one-star review.
All of them.
You're the one-star review. It's wow, this one's from Rich. This one's from Richard. This one's from Dick. This one's just all.
Actually, that would be Bert. I'm the only reviews on your Goodreads, and they're all. I just deliberately tank your Goodreads score.
Okay, so this is the last paragraph of Patrick's review here. He says, by the end of this book, I realized Name of the Wind has immersed me in an intricate role-play situation. Through reading this book, I became more than myself. I am not just a reader who read a masterpiece called Name of the Wind. I am not the chronicler who wrote Quoth's Journey, and I am not Quoth's loyal apprentice. I am the one they call Rushy, Bloodless, Six String, and I am the I in the Chronicle. My name is Quoth. You may have heard of me. Now I encourage you to read my story. From both of those reviews, pros, well written. This is not much to respond to.
They're mostly correct, except for the how much they're weighting things. That's all we disagree with, is what I'm hearing.
It seems so. I'm going to...
Well, okay, we do disagree, and like, you know, Patrick's saying it's compelling, and we disagree with that, but also side characters, like, there's only one side character that I thought was mildly, like, interesting, and that was the little orphan girl, like, kind of street urchin. I think it was Aura is her name.
I remember who you're talking about. Ori. Yeah.
She was cool. She was the one other character I was going, neat. Oh, I can't wait till she comes back on this page. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
But everyone else, you really remember the Quoth's friends' names? Really? Like, what'd they do?
They are so bland.
They exist.
Who are they?
Oh, they're friends. They go out drinking, which, to be fair, that's a lot of people's friends. It's like they're drinking buddies. But I don't know if I particularly want to read that. You know, like, they're give us something. Give us something about them. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, no. All the side characters are just incredibly forgettable.
Do you want to do this third review, or do you think we got it out?
Let's go through.
Want to try it?
Let's try.
Okay,
we can try.
Let's see if there's something here, okay?
Is it a chonky review or is it just a normal
it's
one?
It's normal size. I'm going to read until there's something new to react to. I'll do
got
a quick.
It. Well,
so this is from Sean Bars. These are all on Goodreads. Okay, I'll go quicker and then slow down when there's something new.
Got it.
Okay? So Sean says this. When I began reading this, I did so with a yawn. Okay. Again, agreeing. Why do all these reviews... When I picked out these reviews too, I saw Patrick picked his. I saw Mark Lawrence's picked his. I picked this one because it was like one of the top two and it wasn't too long. Like, this isn't, I'm not picking these reviews because they started like this. This is not me going to pick these reviews because this is famous booktuber.
Are we just kind of gaslighting ourselves into saying this is, everyone thinks it's a great book when actually everyone kind of agrees with us?
I think this is like a social, this is a social mob of some sorts. People are like, look at the pros, and then you'll be thrown stones at if you say it's bad because you don't know literature, because look how well it's written. So people are afraid.
I will say, personally, I think I've seen the cultural book zeitgeist has shifted more toward us in recent years. Like, I remember seeing when, like, I watched Mike's book review before we had a YouTube channel and everything. I saw Mike's book review on the Name of the Wind book and him giving it, you know, a really low score. And I remember those comments like really
rough.
Oh yeah, they were going like, what the hell? Like, there was a lot of backlash I remember seeing initially to that video. And now when we had our review on, I'll be honest, I didn't see much of a backlash. Like, some people disagree.
It was pretty 50-50 though.
But yeah, for the most part, a lot of people seem to be on our side on that one. Mm. And so I'm thinking overall, the culture's moving toward, like, yeah, it's well written, but nothing much else there.
Oh, I want to see if Sean says differently. Because he says, right. When I began reading this, I did so with a yawn. It initially appeared quite basic and completely uninspiring. Well, it's going to change, obviously.
It's going to change. He gave it
a five, these are all 5-star reviews. Okay. I almost stopped reading after 20 pages. Shocking, I know. If I did that, it would have been a massive mistake because this is one of the best fantasy novels published in the last 20 years. There we go. Okay. You guys love it. All right. Those first few pages did nothing to encourage me, but as soon as I realized that this is essentially a story about a story, I was hooked of Rothfuss's magic. The series has such a huge scope. Quill's story isn't something that is told lightly. It is told carefully and with precision. Rothfuss has spent a lot of time setting this up, and in the process has created a lot of apprehension. Let me explain myself. Quoth is telling his story to a chronicler who is writing down every last word. He's telling his story in the manner of a master bard who knows how superior his own tale is. He knows that his life was somewhat eventful, to say the least. The reader, like the listeners, cannot prize themselves away from it. This was such an extraordinary, clever technique. Okay. Couple things there. Do you want to jump in?
Keep going. Nothing new yet.
Keep going. Yep. Okay. Quoth certainly hasn't had it easy. At the beginning of the book, we hear about this man who has become a living legend. We hear about this man who is hero worshipped and revered. Quoth's nature suggests that his feats were achieved with ease, but a story tells the truth of it. Here's a tale of an arcanist. Who had to struggle and fight for everything he ever earned. Sorry, there's some typos in here, so it's tough to get back at that. This may seem like a little contradictory when considering his superb natural talents, but when he was a boy, he lost everything. He had no family, he had no friends, he had no books, and most importantly, in this world, he had absolutely no money. He is naturally proficient at magic and all things academic. He's clearly someone who belongs at the university. However, tuition fee costs, and he is a lowly beggar living on the streets of Trebon. Thus, a tale of hardship, magic, and struggle to survive unfolds. Rothfuss has Quoth narrate it in such a way that you are listening in earnest for every word. He makes you feel like you are sitting in the Wayward Inn with the chronicler and Bast. He makes you feel like you are there as he tells his life story. He makes you feel like you are hearing the legendary Quoth reveal his secrets for the first time.
Again, magic, prose music, stuff. And women. Yeah. That's the writing of it makes you feel like you're there. Fair or not. Like, yes. But
also, I will say to that point, since we're attacking these 5-star reviews, I'll just touch on the part he did say about Quoth that maybe we haven't addressed a ton. We did talk about his impoverished years of, hey, Quoth hasn't had it easy. He was impoverished. His parents died. All these bad things. Welcome to literature. Welcome to the opening of a novel where your protagonist faces challenges in your act one. And then act two changes to then going on adventure. And in this book, it's the academia adventure. And that's the trope.
That was the most compelling part to me was the beginning of, oh, promise. Cool. Let's see how Quoth actually tackles these challenges and overcomes. And everything else was dull.
Just because there was like, oh, look, just because the protagonist the was is, down. Look.
Yeah. Ah, the protagonist was poor and on his luck. Never read that before.
Parents died. That's never happened in any fantasy story ever. When have parents ever died and then our heroes had to go on an adventure? That's so unique. That's so special. Look at this. Okay, moving on. Try as hard as he might, Quoth never fully repressed the horrors of his past. He was separated. And actually, to say that too, he does forget about Chandrian pretty quick sometimes. You know, it loses his mind at times where it's not the forefront of his mind.
Yes. However, the death of his family does pop up several times. Like it's better.
It's there.
That's better than other things. It is weird how often he kind of, or the story just kind of forgets about the Chandrian. Like it pops up when it's relevant, but not really a moving factor for the plot of when Quoth has some time on his hand. When he's got some free time, now we're going to investigate.
Now let's pontificate.
Let's figure it out. Now that the plot is over, now I can go investigate.
When the plot begins, my question.
That's fair.
Yeah, and Sean continues, he says, Quoth was separated in a most brutal manner from his parents, one that made him almost forget who he was. However, a like-minded storyteller brought him back to himself, which sent him on the path to the university. He slowly starts to remember the magic he learned as a boy. He starts to realize again what he's capable of. He digs up his past and uses it to make him stronger. Indeed, through relearning the music of his youth, he finds solace and a way to pay his tuition fees. He begins to grow up, and in addition to this, he finds an unexpected friend through the power of his lute. I really do love the way the story is told throughout. There is a constant feeling of impending disaster, but I think Ruffus has saved much of Cole's stories for the next books. So you're saying it's a setup. So here's the thing here with these reviews. I think I'm seeing a pattern as well of, hey, there's this constant feeling of impending disaster. There's a lot of these things and stakes that are being saved for the next book, that are being set as for books 2 and 3. That's we've seen that in at least 2 of these reviews now. So nothing interesting happened here is what I'm hearing when I read that.
That's the thing is, if you're judging a book, this is a factor of, like, I actually do understand people's complaints on The Wheel of Time for this specific reason.
That's me.
I think at least the very bare minimum, book one of Wheel of Time actually does give you some conclusions. It's not just complete setup. It actually does, like, each book does kind of have there's an overarching plot and there is some type of delivery.
Whether you call it like the A plot, we call it the B plots, the overarching series thing to solve, but each book has an A plot. Oh, solve this mini boss. Do this
exactly.
Thing.
And
get this.
Completely agree. The B plot is vastly more fascinating than the A plot, more often than not. And yeah, like, to me, I look at it as a big long story because that's the thing I found the most interesting and compelling. And because the promise of these stories, like the promise of the overarching story, was far more compelling. But yeah, it's hard to judge. Like, the reason why I don't give the first book of Wheel of Time very high is because there's promise, but I can't judge a book on promise alone. What do you deliver? What does it actually bring to the table? Just because you set up something doesn't mean you actually, you know, landed the plane. So yeah, now I get it. I disagree with Austin on this because I think it does deliver enough to get me to go to the next one to the point where, hey, it actually does start to deliver on the B plot, and I enjoyed that.
Yes.
But with this book specifically, kind of comparing it, is there is that B plot of promise there.
Yeah.
And sure, the Chandrian can be interesting, and that what is the magic of the name, the name of the wind, and all this, the naming magic. That's,
oh, yeah, by the way, that just happens.
Yeah, it is. It's like, he got angry, and he blew the bully away.
That's the book title.
He did the thing. How did he do the thing? He got real steamed.
And we don't know yet. You'll find out.
Exactly. Again, promise, promise, promise. What's the payoff?
Yeah.
Payoff is dull.
And also the progress is dull. The
progress is also dull.
And you're going,
except for the music. Fine. There move on from that.
Sean continues. He says, he has paced the series in such a clever way. The way in which he reveals the truth behind the legends, which have been made of Quoth's deeds, can only be summed up as brilliantly humorous. He did slay a dragon, and he did burn down Trebon. However, these acts were not in the conventional sense, though he did technically do both. It made me laugh. Huh.
Yeah, so this seems more like that, hey, you subverted expectations,
okay,
but you subverted it in a boring way. Like,
actually, that helped me understand, though, why he enjoyed that. You know what I mean? He gave it a 5-star because when he was reading the book, and sorry, I cut you off with a point.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Continue.
Saying, did slay a dragon, technically did burn down Trebon. However, these acts were not in the conventional sense. So maybe he's looking at that and going, the theme of the book is stories and how you shape yourself and how you present yourself. And he's presented this grandness of Quoth to everybody. Like, look how grand of a person I am. But the actual events he did weren't that grand. And like, maybe he appreciated that because, oh, look, the thing is, I'm trying to say this from his perspective. I don't exactly agree, but I could see why those boring stuff to him was, what a cool ploy on the theme. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's what he's getting at here? Because I'm trying to see, put yourself in the mind of a 5-star reader.
Maybe it's attractive of a read of seeing, oh, a character that is this legend and breaking them down in the sense of, hey, look, they're legendary. Like, you can understand where the legend comes from, but it is somewhat undeserved. And then it makes you think about other legends. It's like, what is the true story behind it? That's fine. Like, that's I guess it's kind of interesting.
counter but to my
problem
own
is
yeah, counter that. Go ahead.
That's a subversion of like, hey, here's what you're expecting, and we're pull a twist. Let's subvert your expectations. Yeah. Subverting our expectations is great when the subversive change is better than what was expected. Generally, I think that's a good rule of thumb.
Yes.
I can't
Does
say
it
that
move
that's
the story
that's a spoiler,
forward in a more compelling way.
Exactly. And going, oh, that's better than what I was expecting. That's a great subversion of expectations.
Also, is it logical?
Does it
make sense? Don't just subvert and go, huh, look, cars exist. Wait, when did a Humvee get here? That doesn't make sense in my fantasy story.
Exactly. So does it make logical sense? And is your change more intriguing, more interesting, more fun than what was expected?
Yep.
In this novel, it's a big novel, and we get promised this legendary status, and the subversive nature's actually, Quoth is not that legendary. That's not as interesting. It's not as fun. Finding out, like, and the real capstone of all of that is maybe a bunch of the other things of, like, him killing a king. Ah, oh, the king killer in this big legendary status, and it actually is a series of unfortunate events, and we see that could be an interesting one, but the way it's done in this novel of, oh, yeah, he killed a dragon. Okay, cool. We're at least going to get something fun. And it's just kind of a high lizard. And that's your conclusion. That's your big ending. That's boring. It's boring as hell. Like, great, you subverted my expectations. And it's dull.
And
that's a worse outcome.
On top of that, too, to counter my own stupid point there, I get this, but at the same time, Quoth is also presented as hero and grand and goes into burning buildings, and he is also doing quote-unquote cool things and hero things that would make him a legend. Yes, he is spreading his name more of like, oh, look at these stories he spreads about Quoth, but at no point is he not the heroic, self-aggrandizing hero's complex. He also does do that stuff.
Now, that would be a very interesting change to the story of deliberately making Quoth very unlikable.
That would make it great. I would love that.
Like, deliberately twisted, quite, an actual, not villain maybe, but just a very darker hero, or not even particularly darker, but take some of the heroic aspects of the character and make it due to misfortune or luck or whatever have you, that he didn't actually jump into the building to save someone from fire, but through happenstance, he gets the credit for it. And seeing how he's getting, like, maybe that could be more interesting of seeing the,
oh, well, tell the theme of story is way better.
Because, yeah. The birth of a legend that is not deserved,
mm-hmm,
could be very interesting. But it seems like you're kind of playing the line of, yeah, he deserves it, but also not really.
It's embellished a bit, but also he is a hero. Okay, that's not interesting. Lean into what you're saying there.
He did actually slay a dragon. It was just a real lame dragon. Versus, actually, dragon was slain and he wasn't the one who did it. He got the credit. Mm. Or he lied. Something else.
Exactly.
Maybe I just want a bit more extreme in it.
No,
to tell the story.
Yes. Make something.
I think that is generally true of most stories, is if you're trying to make a point in a story, try and use extremes. I think extremes make much better points in stories rather than trying to play both sides and making it too on the nose or realistic. People often talk about with stories where don't make your books realistic. Don't make your fantasy or sci-fi realistic. Make it believable. And that's like the important distinction is, like, realistic, like, we got reality. Reality's often very boring and doesn't make sense.
You're exactly right.
You want to make it believable. Believable is not the same thing as realistic.
Realistic dialogue would be a character saying, hey, like, are you, like, doing anything, like, later? In actual speech, people say uhs and buts and hmms. But that's realistic would not look good. what you're exactly talking about and what writers should probably do is
believable, yeah, but not realistic.
Yeah. It's the a story is supposed to be worth reading. A story is supposed to be something grander. And even stories we tell, when we have a vacation or we do something fun,
oh, yeah,
it's very fun. Hey, I saw a volcano. How cool is that? And then I'll say, I saw a volcano and I was 2 inches away from touching the depths of Mount Doom. You can embellish your own stories because you look in hindsight.
You have a fun story. You could tell it in the sense of, yeah, you literally brought marshmallows on. Didn't you bring marshmallows to the volcano so you could roast them?
No.
I thought you did. Or did Justin bring that?
Justin might have brought
them. He brought marshmallows in his bag with him for it.
We couldn't get that close, though.
I know you didn't actually roast it, but you brought him with you for the picture.
I think he did, yes.
Okay, yeah.
But yes, things again, like that. You get what I mean?
Funny, like,
yeah.
Because then you take a fun picture of you, like, in the background of a volcano with, you know, stick, a marshmallow on a stick. And you go, that's a cool story in a picture. It's great.
It tells a story. Yeah. It's neat. Anyways, so I like your point there because go for the more extreme. It seemed like it was waffling around with several things and didn't go into one lane. Because in one way, this five-star reviewer, Sean's interpreting it as, oh, I thought it was hilarious how it didn't slay the dragon or burn the town, but then at the same time does do those heroic things. So it's, yeah, we addressed it. Okay, this next part about the review, Sean says, for me, this series has everything. It's an interesting magic system that is both complicated and difficult to master. It has a protagonist who is very well written and deep in sensibility. We talked about that. And to top it off, he has three mistresses, magic, music, and woman. Kind of like how he wrote that. It's cool.
Well-written line, sir. Well-written line.
He tries to balance the three, but often fails extraordinarily. That doesn't again, we talked about this. That doesn't matter, though, because this has to be one of the best romances I've read in fantasy. And I do wonder if it will be fulfilled or forgotten. I want to emphasize again. I will emphasize again. It's an unhealthy way to have a relationship. Quoth's view of Denna is twisted and fucked, okay? Do not do that. Do not think she's a wild flower in her own thing. And, you know, I might not taste her mouth. I might not be with her. And I might not touch her supple breasts. But sorry.
There's two lessons here.
That's literally... No. We can read the line. It's creepy.
Here's the thing. There's a lesson for the men toward women of, like,
yeah,
guys, really not healthy to view women that way. You're, like... Quoth sees women as an object, as this wild that takes agency away. Like, they are completely responsible for their own decisions. They are completely culpable of their own decisions. Don't treat them like objects. Now, exclusively for the guys here, don't be a simp. Quoth is one of the most massive simps I've ever read in fiction. Honestly, just ever read. It is gross. It is revolting. Don't do that. And honestly, if the point of the book was that, like, that's not good, but the way it is written in a way, just like the poetic, like the fact that it's at the end of the book, it's paired with present and past Quoth, written in this poetic way that you're supposed to agree and sympathize with him. No, don't do that.
I have known her longer. My smile said, true, you have been inside the circle of her arms, tasted her mouth, felt the warmth of her, and that is something I have never had. But there is a part of her that is only for me. You cannot touch it, no matter how hard you try. And after she has left you, I will still be here, making her laugh. My light shining in her, I will still be here long after she has forgotten your name. And that's just a paragraph. There's more around that. And I get this is coming from two guys, too. My better half, Nicole, I read that to her, and she convulsed. She's actually dead now, because I read this to her a year ago, and she's been missing ever since. But she also did not like it. I get some people do, but I can't see it.
No, it's awful.
I don't get it.
I'm so thoroughly uninterested in the romance. Like, stay away from each other. No. None of that. Here's an interesting thing. I remember reading online and seeing it of Denna actually has a lot of hate online. Like, a lot of people hate Denna. And for me, like, I don't get it.
I don't hate her.
Okay. I think I understand it because you're reading from Quote's point of view and people don't like how, you know, Denna is, you again, it. I think people taking Quote's point of view of like having this possession of Denna and then seeing Denna date or, you know, mess around with other men and going like, ah, terrible how Denna is treating Quote when ultimately they're not dating. She's never indicated that. She's given him plenty of chances to
never once asked her out. Never once.
Never given an indication. And so it is, I think a lot of that is projection. Like, people take Quoth's stance and of this possession of Denna and then ultimately are like disgusted by her with other men and going like,
yeah. It's so bad. It's... So infuriating.
Reddit has like a huge thing of like hating Denna. Like, I remember reading that after I read the book and going, no, the thing is, Denna actually has a very interesting story that we just don't read her perspective. Like, I can understand, like, she's not a compelling character for the sole reason of we just don't have enough page time with her of actually getting her point of view.
We only get from Quoth. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, fair enough. But yeah, no, reading that kind of stuff made me look at it like, this is very unhealthy way to view relationships.
That's me why the thought provoking is 1 star. I think it is awful and is the opposite of what you should do. Is bad advice. Is don't read this literature and emulate it.
Yeah.
There's a super easy solution to this whole thing. Hey, Denna, I really like you.
Let's go on a date.
No.
Yes?
Yes,
awesome.
Or no?
No? That's a nice day.
That's so sad. I'll think about your lips for another year and maybe get over it one day. That's life.
Ask the girl.
Take agency.
Or move on.
I hate to say.
It's a big thing of like the friend zone. It like Quoth is in the friend zone. And ultimately that doesn't exist. It's a self-made prison. It's of your own design. If you're interested
in
someone,
you are there out of your own free will.
Yes. It's also just creepy. Don't do that. Like, either be a friend and like, all right, there we go. Move on. But don't hang around some woman because like you want to just swoop in there. No, don't do it.
The friend zone implies like you're in this zone where you want to date them, but you're staying friends and waiting for that moment to strike.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
It's unhealthy.
Anyways,
it's absurd.
Yeah, just
gross.
Don't listen to
the book.
You know what? Can I hate? Okay.
Go ahead. Okay. Hate. Let it flow.
Okay. This is the end of the review. Okay. I want to see if that's the point. That's the takeaway from this 5-star. At least this 5-star review said something where we could say, hey, you like the romance. Here's why the romance sucks. I like that there was a statement there. I want to see if there's another statement. This is the last paragraph or two. Okay. The world in which this is set is developed and wonderfully written. At the end of the book, I simply wanted to join the university and explore its archives. This place has more books that can be read in a lifetime. It is packed full of tomes of every variety. I have a soft spot for novels that take time to describe books and libraries, and in the process, sure love of reading. For me, this made the university a rather desirable location, even if its several staff members are confrontational and directly seek rivalries with students. I will say the cool thing about the library was... wasn't there a battle about how to organize the library because it was so big? And
yeah, and because of the hierarchy of it, it's deliberately made confusing to hide knowledge to make sure that the head librarian is actually still useful and they keep it kind of secret because if they just do a good, if they just use the Dewey Decimal System. There's no need for a head librarian.
It's job security.
It literally is. They make it confusing for job security.
AI can't beat me if I destroy technology and all the electrical grid.
Actually,
what?
No, that's genuine thing of like in the workforce. Like there's such a thing as being like too efficient with your job that you like just eliminate your own job for yourself.
Oh yeah, like you're so good. They're like, oh, we don't need you anymore.
Yeah, that's
you just built a system for us to replace you.
build in fail safes for yourself of like, if you figure out, oh, my job actually can be done through a few automations and like I'm done, do that. Cool. But then work, figure out, either find a new job and like use that time to move on, or use that time to make yourself more valuable to the job. Offer that. And once you have secured your position again, then mm-hmm. you tell your boss like, hey, look, I actually would figure out a way to automate my previous position to like save you money. They're like, oh, awesome. Like, anyway, don't give the cow away for free is my point. Like, do be good at your job, but don't price yourself out of the market, out of your job without an actual backup plan. That's all I'm saying.
I love the library and how that's
set up. Librarian's good.
It has a message about that. You know what?
Good.
Maybe there is something to take away from this book. I kind of like that takeaway. Okay. Yeah. The very last paragraph, Sean says, the story was, simply put, excellent. There are perhaps a mere handful of fantasy novels that I've enjoyed reading as much as this. To my mind, Rothfuss has more than earned his reputation. I'm so glad this book lived up to the hype, and I hope the rest of the series is every bit as grand as its opener.
Well, that was an actual 5-star review.
It was an actual 5-star review. I feel so confident that people are gaslighting themselves into giving this 5 stars.
Yeah.
Every review here that we read mm-hmm. said, here's some problems. Pros, here's some problems. Music, here's some problems. Pros and music.
Pros and music. That is the book. That's what, if that's all you're looking for, pros and music, well, maybe you will like it if you don't care about anything else. But you have anything you want to end off with, say, tell people?
If the name of the wind has no haters, I am dead. I am not here. I have gone on to the other life.
Final message for the boys as the counter message to this book. Actually approach women. Be honest with your intentions. And if you keep getting a lot of no's, work on yourself until you start receiving yeses.
That's too sound. No.
That's
what we need a 250,000 word book to explore that.
I will say most self-help book targeted toward men about women can be summed up in that. And that's kind of all the advice you need.
Take agency.
Yeah. You are the master of your own destiny. Figure it out. Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.